You are listening to an American Free Press podcast. Hello and welcome. Thomas Malthus, the 18th and 19th century British scholar, said, "The power of population is indefinitely greater than the power in the earth to produce subsistence for man." In 2007, the United Nations Population Division projected the world's population will likely surpass 10 billion in 2055. As of January 15, 2011, world population is estimated by the U.S. Census Bureau to be 6.894 billion. Global commodities prices have been surging recently. Just go to your local grocery store or watch the food riots broadcast from around the world for evidence of this. A simple solution to the global food crunch is to grow more, right? Well, no. Problem is, there really is no more cultivated land, or land that can be cultivated. We're fresh out of space, and it looks like, although he's been attacked by the experts, Malthus may be onto something. Remember Victory Gardens from World Wars I and II? Looks like they'll be making a comeback. Joining me on the line is Steve Mercer, Director of Communications for U.S. Wheat Associates, whose stated mission is to develop, maintain, and expand international markets to enhance the profitability of U.S. wheat producers. Steve, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you very much, Dave. I appreciate it.
Steve, is U.S. Wheat Associates a trade association?
I think you would call us a cooperator organization between U.S. wheat producers and the U.S. Department of Agriculture's Foreign Agricultural Service. Basically, our role is to promote wheat exports overseas, representing the interest of wheat producers. And we are funded directly by those wheat producers through state organizations that collect what's called a checkoff. That's a small amount of money that every producer pays for the bushels of wheat they produce. And a part of that money goes to us. And that qualifies us to receive export market development funds from the Foreign Ag Service. It's a very successful public-private partnership. We see great return to the U.S. economy and to wheat producers as well. We're excited about that role. We don't buy or sell wheat. We just represent the interests of producers.
Okay. And there are some things that you can and can't do. And one of the things you can't do, you can't talk about price. Is that right?
Yeah, we take a pretty detailed look at the wheat market up until the moment. We have some thoughts about where the market might be going in terms of demand and supply, mainly demand in the future. But, you know, in terms of prices in the U.S., the marketplace determines that price, and anything going forward would be speculation.
Right. Okay. Lately, there have been some news stories out, actually this week. Yesterday, there was a story on Bloomberg, grain prices surge as U.S. cuts crop estimates signal tighter food supply. And today in the Wall Street Journal, prices soar on crop woes. U.S. cuts global grain supply outlook, higher prices expected at grocery stores. And of course, when they say the U.S., it's the U.S. Department of Agriculture. They mention, of course, corn and soybeans and wheat. Of course, we're just going to stick to wheat. What's happening with wheat? Why have prices surged as much as they have lately?
Well, it goes back to earlier in 2010. Early in the year, as the new crop is being harvested, beginning in, say, April, and maybe a little bit earlier in other parts of the world, it looked like we had plenty of wheat in the world. And then the crop in Russia began to suffer from a severe drought. And that drought got worse and worse up until the point of harvest, when they had pretty serious cuts in their harvest. And to top it off, the Russian government stepped in, intervened, and decided to ban exports. Russia had been becoming a fairly major player in the world market. And when the government cut off exports, the market reacted to that and the prices shot up. And I think if you go back to early August, if you look at wheat futures prices, that's the signal. And the market reacted to that. Went up for a while, it's kind of leveled off a little bit. And then as the picture of the crop in other parts of the world that are harvested later began to take shape, what has been discussed recently is that there's a fairly significant shortage of what we call high-quality milling wheat. So higher-protein wheat and wheat that has good characteristics for flour milling, because of basically weather and other situations, that kind of wheat is very short. And of course, that's the wheat that primarily gets exported. So it's a fundamental situation, supply. And not only that, demand in the world has been going up as well, primarily from increased population in underdeveloped countries. So it's a supply and demand situation with the government intervention from Russia based on their export ban.
Mm-hmm. That's where it started. Of course, the U.S. is the world's largest grain exporter, and domestic wheat inventories are going to be about 16% less than a year earlier. Are we running out of land? Is that what it is? There's no more... So there's no more land to grow these crops? Is that part of the problem?
You know, if you compare it to last year, it's just a part of the picture. Actually, in the 3 years prior to this, well, counting the latest harvest, the world had actually produced more wheat than it had before. So we felt that we were in good shape. And frankly, if we get to where USDA predicts, we will actually have a pretty strong amount of wheat left in the U.S. here at the end of this marketing year, which ends in May of next year before the next harvest. So here in the U.S., you know, we're fine. We actually produce enough wheat to export almost half of what we grow every year. So the world certainly depends on our supply. Then you step back and you look at what's happening here in the U.S. and around the world. Basically, you're right. There is not any significant additional land that can be cultivated. We're farming on land that we've been farming on for a long time. There's just not any additional land that we can farm on in the U.S. And there has been we call it a fight for acres between crops like corn, soybeans, canola, and wheat. And it goes back to profitability for farmers. In areas where producers can grow another crop like corn and soybeans, those crops are more profitable for the farmer. So the trend long term, and this is also going on in the rest of the world to a somewhat lesser extent, but the trend long term for the last 30 years, the number of wheat acres has been trending down steadily.
Right. I see that last year, as a matter of fact, for wheat acres at least, the planted area was the smallest since 1913. Is that a typo?
Well, I think in Kansas, it was the smallest number of acres that were planted to wheat. For the entire U.S., you have to go back to the late 60s, early 70s. So basically what was happening, as the amount of wheat in the world increased, the prices actually were going down from a peak that happened back in 2008, a very strong peak. Some folks might remember that. It went down steadily, steadily, steadily to the point where it was actually about the same price it was before the last run-up in prices. And that was a supply shock. So basically, the profitability higher on other crops. Not only that, there are characteristics in these other crops that have allowed them to expand into areas that traditionally would be planted to wheat. Some areas, especially in the West, in the more arid regions, wheat is the only choice folks have. But in a lot of areas, corn, soybeans, the new varieties are better adapted to those areas. And the majority of farms in this country are still family-run businesses, but they're still businesses. So if they see an opportunity to make more money with another crop, to the extent that they can, they'll probably grow it.
Right. And of course, you said earlier the drought in Russia and Russian public policy started this off. How about La Nina and the floods in Australia?
Australia has struggled for, almost 10 years with weather. Up until a couple years ago, they were struggling with drought. They had an extended drought. And Australia is a big wheat producer and also a big exporter. And if you go back to 2007, 2008, they had an extremely small crop because of drought. And that helped to set off a bad supply issue then and higher prices. You know, we're not exactly sure what's going to happen in Australia, partly because in the eastern part of the country where the floods are now, there's a lot of wheat grown, but the majority of the wheat that's exported from Australia is exported from Western Australia, which has been much less impacted by weather. They had a pretty good crop. I think the concern is that the extent of the floods now, at a time when they were just harvesting or had finished harvesting, I think that the markets are certainly reacting to that. And it's a signal that it's a supply signal that there could be an issue with supply. Australia harvests, obviously, they've been harvesting because their seasons are reversed, of course, with the U.S. So they plant in what would be our spring and harvest in what would be our fall and winter.
Right. And La Nina, that had an impact on South America, right?
Yeah, there is some drought concern in Argentina. I think that's primarily affecting, Argentina and Brazil, I think that's primarily affecting the soybean crop there. And they do attribute certainly the floods in Australia to La Nina effect. I think we're potentially seeing it here in the U.S. as well, because really the heart of wheat country, western Kansas, Colorado, parts of Nebraska, and Oklahoma are very dry this year too. The amount of wheat that was planted last fall in those areas is up quite a bit. Overall in the country, about 10% up, but they planted into dust and they have not gotten much rain since then. So we're going to keep an eye on that. But you also have to look at other parts of the U.S., farther north into South Dakota and up into Montana, North Dakota, out into the Pacific Northwest where other wheat is grown. You know, they're in good shape in terms of water. So one of the things that makes the U.S. unique and also a reliable supplier is just the vast area where wheat is grown. It's very, very rare to have a severe drought issue or flooding issue that affects the entire crop in the U.S. So, you know, our customers overseas that rely on us know that we're going to have the wheat. Our system is very efficient in the private exporters to sell the wheat, manage their risk quite well. So, you know, I think that that puts us in that position. And, you know, frankly, we're going to continue to sell a lot of wheat the rest of this year.
Mm-hmm. And of course, you mentioned that developing nations have been behind a lot of the demand issue. And of course, they're changing diets, specifically China. I guess corn is the nation's biggest crop, followed by soybeans. Is wheat the third biggest crop in the United States?
Yeah, I believe so. Yes.
Okay.
So in terms of production, yeah, definitely.
Grain traders, and this is from the Wall Street Journal article, grain traders expect China to buy about a third of all the soybeans harvested in the United States last fall. That's huge. How much wheat do they buy from the United States?
Actually, China as a single country is the world's largest producer of wheat. So typically, they're pretty self-sufficient. They have in the past imported quite a lot, and they do occasionally import wheat to make sure that their stocks are strong. I think their primary goal is food security. So if they need wheat, they will buy it. You know, I think there is interaction between what happens with other crops, especially corn and wheat, partly because wheat can be substituted as an animal feed, can substitute corn as an animal feed if the price is close. So the gap right now is pretty wide, but the futures prices do tend to also follow corn up or down as well.
Mm-hmm. And of course, wheat is up about what, 80% this year?
I don't know the exact percentage. You know, I think we entered the year right at about $5 on the futures market. That's not what farmers get. I think some folks in, say, Oklahoma and Texas that sold their wheat as they harvested probably were only able to get $4, maybe a little bit more for their wheat. I think the futures price today is up, depends on the type of wheat. There are several classes, but in the $8 range. So I would say, yeah, pretty good increase. I mean, there's no doubt about it.
And of course, the World Economic Forum made note of rising commodity prices. They felt that this might strain the world's food system, and it's making them nervous, citing demand for water, food, and energy as a risk facing the world. What are you folks thinking about the recent food riots or what happened in 08 and the prices that are going to be going up here in the United States? And really, because there's not much land, as we mentioned. What do you think?
Well, you know, we tend to see, in our experience in the past, we tend to see the market taking care of that. Back in 07, 08, in seven of the previous 10 years, the world had produced less wheat than it consumed. We hit a point where we were, we had 21 days of supply left in the U.S.,
right,
for example, before harvest. So that was a huge supply shock. But the farmers reacted to that. And I think Russia, for example, made a concerted effort to try to increase their grain production and specifically wheat. And as a result of that, I think, as I mentioned earlier, the 3 years prior to this, we had record crops of wheat. And prices reacted in the way that you would think, back down to levels that we were at before the run-up in 07, 08. We just saw a report from USDA that the amount of wheat acres planted in the U.S. went up 10%. In certain areas, it was up almost 50%. So that is going to happen around the world. If farmers can plant more wheat because they know they can make more money with it now, they will do that. And prices eventually will have to react. If you look long term, and we have done that, we have looked, tried to look out into the future in supply and demand. Population is going to grow to potentially 9 billion people by 2050. The developing world is going to have the most influence on wheat consumption because of population. Wheat tends to be a staple in those underdeveloped countries for basic bread. And so we feel that in the next 40 years that the world is going to have to produce 40% more wheat than it produces today. Now, that's a lot because we've increased at 1% and 2% a year in terms of production. The wheat acres continue to go down, which is counterintuitive to that, and that's a concern. And we'll have to fight for acres with corn and soybeans, et cetera, to get to that level. But then when you look at world trade, where the wheat is grown and where it's needed, the majority of the growth in population is going to be in the middle latitudes where wheat is not traditionally grown because of the tropical climates. So the wheat is going to have to move from areas where it's grown to areas where it's most needed. So trade in wheat is probably going to have to double to a level of what we think is about 250 to 260 million metric tons. Right now, it's about half of that. So long-term population, the impact on the rest of the crops in the economic growth in countries like China and India and places that the demand for protein is going up. That's why soybeans and corn is moving there, because they're demanding protein and typically animal protein. Those are typically feed crops. The demand for wheat in those areas where population is growing, we see the demand for food is only going to grow. So as a world, we have to find ways to produce more food and to move it to the places where it's needed. You know, I think it's more stable today than it used to be because these folks have found a way to select crops that they can rotate that provide a good, solid income and a hedge against problems in one crop for a year. So, you know, they found ways to farm all year. They found ways to rotate that work for them. Wheat fits in pretty well in that rotation. It allows them to control weeds in a different way, for example. And, you know, there's been an incredible increase in the amount of no-till, which is saving soil and sequestering carbon. So I have no doubts that U.S. farmers and farmers around the world will do their best to try to meet those needs. And I think they're better prepared today, I think, than they've ever been.
Does U.S. Wheat Associates take a stand on genetically modified organisms?
Currently, there is no genetically modified wheat that's commercially available in the world today. We are aware that a number of technology providers, public universities around the world are doing research in genetically modified wheat. And the main effort right now is to try and provide traits for that wheat that will help meet that demand. When you look at providing drought tolerance to wheat, to providing traits that help the wheat use nitrogen more efficiently, so we can produce more with less nitrogen fertilizer, resistance to salinity, which is a huge problem in those areas like Australia that have had drought year after year. So the research is going on, and our position is that producers should have the opportunity to use the technology that's available. At the same time, we recognize that our customers want to have a choice, and we're confident that the marketplace is going to provide that.
With the global population increasing by about 50% in less than 40 years, and the fact that there really isn't more land to farm on, to cultivate on, and that farmers have to pick one crop over the other, and we're feeling the strains of this right now, what's going to happen in 40 years or even 10 years if we come across some more drought or some more public policy that doesn't really make sense for the farmers? Couldn't you see that the situation might get out of control?
Well, you know, in the past, we've worried about that, and we've been concerned that we'd be able to produce enough food, and the population has certainly increased dramatically in the last 50 years, for example, but our productivity has increased dramatically. I mean, today, one U.S. farmer feeds 150 people. It used to be 20. So mechanization, and yes, the technology that's being put in the seeds now, today, have the potential to help us meet that demand. We're confident that we can do it. It is not going to be easy, because clearly, there are differences in opinion about some of this technology. We respect that. But when we look at the future, we recognize that we have to be able to produce more food, and we have to do it with fewer resources. We have to do it with less water. We have to do it with fewer pesticides. We have to do it in a way that doesn't contribute to climate change. So it is a challenge. But I think we've seen technology meet that challenge in the past, and we sure hope that it will in the future. And I think in terms of wheat, the increase in research that's going on right now is going to bring some benefits to the wheat producer and ultimately the people that buy wheat around the world in the near term, and I'm talking 4 or 5 years, from conventional breeding techniques that are being used. And then probably any trait that comes from genetic modification would probably not be available on the market for 8 or 10 years.
Mm-hmm. Has there ever been a situation where land has been so scarce as it is now?
Boy, that's a good question. I think it's a matter of perception. I think that we certainly are farming less land in the U.S. today than we used to, just from urban sprawl and primarily that. You know, we're producing a significantly higher level of crops, food, on less land. So it's hard to say. I would imagine that land that has been farmed, I mean, if you look at most of the folks that are involved with our organization, you know, their families have been on that land for 100, 150 years. So they're still out there, they're still farming, and they're just getting more and more efficient. And that's the answer.
Okay, so we might see in the future perhaps some reclamation of urban land like is happening in Detroit and across the country with that organization Urban Farming. I mean, we might get to the point where we might have to convert some urban areas to farmland, right?
I feel like there's room for everyone. And if that's going to help folks that live in what USDA would call a food desert, for example, you know, where they don't have access to groceries and they could get together for communities and produce garden type vegetables or other food that's locally grown, that's great. I mean, I think the U.S. is lucky in that, you know, we have that ability. Other countries maybe not so lucky. You know, there's room for conventional farming. There's room for organic farming. There's room for urban farming, if you will. And I think that most likely, this is my opinion, personal opinion, I think that all of those things will be necessary in the future. Until then, you know, we'll keep working to help our wheat producers stay profitable so they can continue to grow wheat, not only for the U.S. citizens, but also for folks around the world that are going to need to depend on it.
And of course, your website is www.uswheat.org. Steve Mercer, Director of Communications for U.S. Wheat Associates. I want to thank you so much for the time you spent today educating our listeners. Hopefully, the situation will improve for people around the world, for people in the United States. Right now isn't a good time for people to be paying more for their basic foodstuffs. Not a good time to be hit with these high gas prices and high bread prices and whatnot.
Our producers, I know, are very committed to what they do, and they're going to try to increase their efficiency as much as they can every year.
Well, I hope so. Thanks again, Steve. I appreciate your time.
You're welcome. Thank you.